I'm worried about little Dilbert. He's not like other kids.
What do you mean?
Yesterday, I left him alone for a minute, and he disassembled the TV, our clock, and the stereo.
That's perfectly normal. Kids take things apart.
Oh! The part that worries me is he used the components to build a ham radio set.
Oh, dear.
Is that bad?
Normally, I'd want to run an EEG on him, but the machine isn't working. It's worse than I feared.
What is it?
I'm afraid your son has the knack.
The knack?
The knack. It's a rare condition characterized by an extreme intuition about all things mechanical and electrical, and utter social ineptitude.
Can he lead a normal life?
No. He'll be an engineer. There. Don't blame yourself.
Hello, fellow Blind Cool Tech listeners. This is Robert Carter once again from Texas. And yes, I'm one of those people who have the knack. I've been interested in amateur radio and electronics. Actually, radio of all types and electronics of all types since I was a very small child, probably around 5 years old. At that age, my father used to have me do the tuning of his car radio, that is, get it on the station, because he had a hearing loss as a result of having been in the Korean War, and he couldn't hear when he had it on the station well, but he could hear when it wasn't on the station well, so I learned to do the fine tuning on the radio. Also, my aunt tells a story where around that age where my grandfather had an old TV, and that TV didn't work anymore, and I took it apart, and that was kind of the easy part. Then my grandfather and I put it back together, and it did work. I suspect that we just reseated one of the tubes or something that maybe wasn't making a good connection, and the TV worked again for a while. So I sort of got the reputation as being good with radios and TVs and electronics and all that. When I was about age 10, I had some walkie-talkies that I loved, and I would get on them and listen and talk a lot. And they were on the CB band or Citizen band, one of the Citizen band channels. And one of my neighbors who lived a couple blocks away heard me talking. He was listening on his CB radio, and he actually talked to me, and I thought that was the coolest thing. And he eventually got me into CB radio. At that time, you had to have a license for CB. You do not these days, but at that time you did. I wasn't old enough to apply and receive a license, but my father got a license, and I really enjoyed CB radio, made a lot of friends during that time of my life on the radio. It was a great hobby for me then. I also became interested in amateur or ham radio, which is a more advanced form of radio than Citizen band. Amateur radio operators have a lot more frequencies allocated to them and are able to communicate in much greater distances, actually all over the world, via radio. I didn't really do too much as far as pursuing the ham radio hobby at that time, other than listen a lot to the amateur frequencies. One of the things that always frightened me about amateur radio was the fact that you had to pass tests to get a license, and you also had to pass a Morse code proficiency exam, and I was always kind of afraid of that. But about 10 years or so ago, I woke up one Saturday morning. This was, of course, after I had completed college and graduate school, and I was married and had a family. I decided what was missing in my life, now that the career was underway and so forth, was a hobby. And when I thought about it, I thought, well, the hobby that I'd really like to engage in would be amateur radio or ham radio. At the time I got licensed in amateur radio, there were five, technically six classes of license that you could get. You had to take a test, a written test, multiple choice test for each license class that you wanted. And the test got progressively harder as you obtained a higher class of license. But the higher class of license you had, the more frequencies you were allowed to operate on. And of course, being me, I couldn't settle for anything but the most difficult, highest class of license because I wanted access to all the frequencies. So I have an amateur extra class license, which allows me to access on all the frequencies. I had to take all of the tests, the novice, the technician, the general, the advanced, and the extra class exams. Plus, I had to pass a 20-word-a-minute proficiency exam in Morse code. And I studied for about a year to complete all those tests as well as the Morse code requirements. Actually, maybe a little longer than a year, probably more like 14 months or so is how long it took me to go from start to finish. There are good materials out there for amateur radio that are accessible. Recordings for the Blind and Dyslexic have some books and materials, as well as an organization out of Minnesota called Handy Hams, which is a group that specifically to assist people with disabilities who are interested in becoming involved in amateur radio. Also, the licensing process has been simplified significantly since the time that I got into amateur radio. These days, there are only three classes of license, and the highest level of Morse code proficiency that you're required to demonstrate is 5 words per minute as opposed to the 20 words per minute when I took the test. Well, what is amateur radio? It's actually a set of frequencies on many different bands that the Federal Communications Commission has allocated for the purpose of several things, really. One, amateur radio operators, or ham radio operators, as we're called. One of our missions is to further the art of radio. So we tend to experiment with radio, both voice communications, data communications, digital communications, connecting our radios to computers. Some of us use Morse code, of course, as well as other types of communications. And ham radio operators have often been leaders in developing new communications, radio communications technologies. In addition to participating and experimenting in the art of radio, of course, we use our radios. We're permitted to use them just to chat and communicate with each other. We're also very involved with emergency communications. A lot of times when there is a natural disaster, such as some of the hurricanes we've been through recently, or a terrorist attack, or some other disaster, the regular communication will go down. The landline telephones will stop working because maybe the lines are down or there are other problems. Cell phones quickly get overloaded, too many people making calls, and they go down. And a lot of times the Red Cross, fire, and police have difficulty communicating with their equipment because they may not be on the same frequencies, may not be able to talk to each other the way that they need to. So amateur radio comes into play because we have both portable and home-based or base station type equipment, most of us, and we're able to go out and assist in providing communications, or we're able to assist a lot of times from our home. I've passed a lot of health and welfare type messages during some of the hurricanes and other situations where people were trying to get in touch with loved ones to find out whether they were okay or not. I've been able to help assist people in doing that a lot of times when the other communication means were unavailable. So we do provide a service. We also, in my town, help out with communication sometimes when there's a special event like a parade or sometimes a university event we may help out with. So that's one of the purposes it is as a public service. Amateur radio right now, I believe, has about 700,000 or 800,000 licensed users in the United States. That had dropped off some over the last 10 or 15 years because of the easy access of cell phones for communications and the internet, voice over IP communications on the internet and so forth. But it's begun to increase some in popularity again because of this need for emergency communication. I use all the voice over IP communications, and I use the cell phone, of course, but there's nothing quite like getting on the radio where there are no wires connecting you and being able to talk to somebody on the other side of the world or on the other side of the country or on the other side of town or the other side of your state. I want to describe a little bit about the equipment that I have here in my ham radio room, or what we call the shack, the radio shack. And one of the things that is really cool about the equipment that I have is the accessibility of it. As you might imagine, like everything else, the radios that we use in amateur radio have gotten more and more complicated over the years. There are more and more menus and multifunction buttons that do different things depending on what you're doing at the time you press a button. These radios are very difficult to operate if you can't see the display screen. And but the good news is, at least certainly in my case, is that ham radio friends are people who are really willing to help out. And I live in a community of, since it's a university community, with lots of ham buddies who are also very talented electronic engineers. Most of them do that for a living with the university. There are also many talented software engineers who are hams in my community. And when I got my radio, the one that I primarily use, which is called an ICOM, that's the manufacturer, the number is a 746, I did one thing that made it a little bit more accessible. I installed a speech synthesizer chip in the radio that would enable it to read a little bit of information to me about what's on the display, but it's very limited. It will only read the signal strength meter, speak the signal strength meter, and speak the frequency that the radio is tuned to. I'll let you hear that now.
4.14.2800 megahertz.
Okay, so the signal strength meter was a 4, and it told us the frequency after that the radio is tuned to. That's the only real accessibility that is built into the radio itself. I quickly realized that there were many things that I just couldn't do that I wanted to do with the radio without being able to have access to the display. So one of my friends who is a who was a software engineer in the petroleum industry agreed to write a computer program for me that would allow me to control my radio through my PC. It's possible to connect the radio to a PC through a serial port. And there was a program out there already that allowed this to happen for my particular radio, but unfortunately, it was not a very accessible program because what it did, it put a graphic of the face of the radio up on the screen of the computer, and you were supposed to point and click on the graphic just as if you were pressing buttons on the radio. That was not very accessible to a screen reader. So my friend wrote a program in Visual Basic using completely standard Windows controls, giving me access to everything that I need access to on this radio through the computer. And I thought I would just go through this program a little bit with you, just kind of showing you what some of the options and possibilities are. If we if it's a standard Windows program, and so we'll just, first of all, I'll press the Alt key and we'll run through the menu bar.
File left pull down.
That's the file menu.
Edit pull down.
Edit menu.
Set as pull down.
A set menu.
Read R pull down.
A read menu.
VFOV pull down.
A VFO menu, which is one of the settings on the radio.
Memory M pull down.
Memory menu, which allows you to set up the memory memories of the radio.
Split pull down.
Split is another technical thing that one can do with these radios, where you can transmit on one frequency and receive on a different frequency. That's done sometimes in long distance communication.
And then pull down.
That's the antenna menu, where you can switch the radio's focus from one antenna to another.
Preferences pull down.
There's a preferences menu where you can set up how you want the program to operate.
Help page pull down.
And a help menu. So that those are the actual menus that are available. And of course,
menu closed. Read only edit box frequency 14156.000.
I just pressed Alt to close the menu, and what it did was read us the frequency, because that's what we're setting on. In addition to the menus, there are several tabs, or several controls in this program that you use the tab key to move between. Right now we're sitting on the frequency control, and if I have a hotkey, which is F2, if I press that, the program will read the frequency that the radio is on.
14,287.000.
It's on 14.287, which is the 20 meter band. If I just turn the knob and tune down the band a little bit check the frequency again, I just randomly turn the knob down to the left a little bit. Now what frequency are we on?
14,255.000.
So we're on 14,255. So again, it gives me complete access to what frequency I'm on. Now, as you saw, the radio itself can tell me the frequency, but it's much more convenient, much more accessible with a computer program. And also, the other thing about the frequency is that I can type a frequency into this edit box and press enter, and the radio will immediately go to that frequency, no matter what it is. So if I know I want to get to a particular frequency, like 21.300, which is on the 15 meter band, I can simply type in that frequency, press enter, and the radio is immediately on it. Very, very easy way to access this radio in terms of frequency. The next tab, or the next control that I get to when I press tab,
read only edit box mode USB,
is the mode. The screen reader said read only edit box, because that's the type of control it is. And the mode, it said USB. which stands for upper single sideband. And that's the mode that we're currently in on the band that the radio is sitting on. I won't try to explain the technicalities of the different modes, but just let you know that information here is here in this program.
Read only edit box filter normal.
The filter is set to normal. You can set all kinds of different filters. If you have a weak signal, you can change the filtering and try to do something to pull it in better so you can hear it better, things like that.
Read only edit box over VFO.
And we're now in the operations control, and that's telling us that we're using the VFO, which stands for variable frequency oscillator. And that's just one of the ways you can tune this radio. You can either use memory mode or VFO mode. And we're in VFO mode, the computer tells us.
Edit box split off.
Split is off. And I talked a little bit about split a minute ago. That's the ability to transmit on a different frequency from the one that you're receiving on. This program allows me to go in and set that up using the computer to set it up so I can tell exactly what frequencies I'm using. And then I can send that data to the computer and it changes it on, send that data from the computer to the radio and it changes it on the radio.
Read only edit box VFOA.
This is telling me that we're using VFOA. There are two VFOs. There's a VFOA and a VFOB on this radio and we're currently on VFOA.
Read only edit box channel 4.
And if we were in the memory, which we're not at the moment, if we switched over to memory mode, it's telling me that the memory is now set to channel 4, which is something that I set up in memory. I have some of my favorite frequencies stored in memory in different channels, so I can just quickly switch to those. And the last one I used was the one that's stored in channel 4.
Read only edit box mic 40.
This is the mic level setting. It's set to 40, which I found to be the best setting for me and for my voice and so forth.
Read only edit box power 20.
Right now the output power is set to 20 watts. And I, of course, can change that via the computer. The maximum output power of this radio is 100 watts. And normally I would have it on 100 if I was going to be transmitting on this band that we're on now, the 14 megahertz band, or also called the 20 meter band. So, but right now it's at 20 watts, which I was using last night when I was talking to some of my local friends just around town and didn't need so much power.
Read only edit box tone off.
Yeah, that's a tone that's currently turned off, and that's something that's used on the VHF, which stands for very high frequency 2 meter band. We use a tone to allow us to connect to various repeaters, which pick up our signal and send it out in a much stronger way than what we could do on that band without a repeater. I won't try to bore you with the gory details of any of this stuff. Just want to give you a little introduction.
Read only edit box duplex offset.
Duplex is the duplex offset. Again, that just means whether you're transmitting and receiving on the same frequency or not. And currently the value of that one is not being displayed because I haven't set it.
AGC slow radio button checked.
AGC slow, and that's a radio button, and that's this has to do with receive sensitivity.
Preamp off radio button checked.
Preamp is off, and the preamp has to do with receiving also. If you turn the preamp on, you can receive weaker stations better, but you also receive more noise.
Read only edit box frequency 14,255.000.
So now we're back to the frequency. And again, this software, we call it ICOM control software. My friend wrote the program. I wrote the documentation for it. It has a pretty pretty good help system. We actually have it context sensitive. So when you press help on a particular control, actually, what happens is Notepad opens up a particular file that gives you information about that specific control. I'm pretty pleased with how the help system worked out. This program, we wrote it several years ago, but it still works just, I'm using it right here with Windows XP, and it still works just fine. We've made this software available as freeware for anyone who wants to make use of it. To get it, you would need to contact me, and I can give you an email address. While I'm thinking of it, it's r-carter@cox.net. And this program is specifically for the ICOM 746 radio. Amateur radio is very interesting in that we can do everything from local across town communications to nationwide and worldwide communications. And actually, to do the worldwide or nationwide communications, you need a fair amount of equipment. You need to have some pretty sophisticated antennas. I have my antennas up on about a 40-foot tower that's in my backyard. And so that means involving yourself and your friends and a pretty good project when you decide to put up one of these towers and put together these antennas. One of the antennas I have is a directional antenna. It's called a beam. You point it in a particular direction, and that's the direction that it's most sensitive in. And one of the problems that I had initially was that I had no real way of telling which way my beam was pointed. And again, another friend of mine thought about this. He's an engineer for the university and called me up one day and said, I think I have a solution for you with your rotor problem. And I said, oh yeah? He said, yeah, I've built you a talking rotor box. And this is a little square box that sits on top of my antenna rotor. It has a push button on the top, and when I press the button, you hear the direction that the antenna is currently pointed in. And I'm going to demonstrate that now. I'm going to press the button on the rotor box and let you hear the direction that the beam is pointed.
Northeast.
So the beam is currently pointed northeast. Now if I change the direction of the rotor and at the same time press the button, as it's moving, you can hear it. You can hear it change eventually to east. So I'm just gonna move the beam a little bit and press the button a few times while it's moving and let you hear it change.
Northeast. East.
So now we've got the antenna pointed east. My friend looked into this and was able to build this little talking rotor box for only a few dollars worth of parts. So that's just another example of how my friends have really helped me out. We have an amateur radio club here that I'm currently the vice president of, and I have a couple guys who are hams who live in my neighborhood here, and we our club, a lot of us go to breakfast on Saturday mornings, and they always offer to give me a ride to breakfast, and I go almost every Saturday and really enjoy the friends that I've made both locally and nationwide and worldwide. To end this, well, Please finish this up. Let me just say that amateur radio is interesting in how we do this distance, long distance communication on what's called the HF or high frequency bands. We actually bounce our signal off of the ionosphere, which is one of the layers of the Earth's atmosphere, of course. And the ability for our signal to travel as it gets bounced back to Earth is heavily dependent on the condition of the sun, on the sunspot cycle. Because in certain phases of the cycle, the sunspot causes the ionosphere to be more charged, electrically charged, which is better for propagating a signal than when it's less charged. And the sunspot cycle is an 11-year cycle that at the beginning of the cycle, the signals are very, very good, very open for worldwide communication. And as the years go by, the signals go down, the cycle hits a low point and then starts cycling back up again. And we're at the low point of the sunspot cycle right now. So the communications aren't as good, but it's still possible to communicate worldwide. I'm going to end this podcast by playing you a little snippet of a couple different amateur communications. The first one is going to be just a communication from a net. We call them nets. It's a network that people check into each evening at 6:30 local time. This is called the Gulf Coast Sideband Net. People check into it from mostly the Gulf Coast states, Texas, Louisiana, Oklahoma, Florida, sometimes a little bit in Tennessee, Mississippi, these states around this area. And the purpose of the net is to pass emergency traffic, if there is any, as well as just provide a network of people who can be in touch with each other if there's a need for that. So I'm going to play a little snippet of someone checking into that net, and then I'm going to play a little snippet of tuning across the 20-meter band, which is the band that we were just showing you a minute ago, the frequencies on. And you're going to hear some communications from around the country, as well as finish up with a brief recording from a station in the northeast of England who's talking to a station back in Wisconsin. Now, my beam is, for this recording, my beam is pointed northeast, so you can actually hear the England station a little better than the Wisconsin station, mostly because the antenna is pointed more toward England than Wisconsin. But it gives you a little flavor for what at least the voice portion of amateur radio is all about. Now, there are all kinds of other types of communication, Morse code, digital communications going on. Actually, when I tune across the 20-meter band, if you listen carefully, you'll hear, I didn't really stop on them, but you'll hear some sort of strange sounds that sound kind of like birds tweeting or something. And one of those that you hear is actually somebody sending amateur TV or TV pictures, what they call slow scan pictures, on the internet. And if you have the proper software on your computer and connected to your radio, you can actually see these pictures that people send show up on your computer screen. So there's just all kinds of exciting, fun communications going on with amateur radio. So that's going to do it for this podcast. I'm going to play these little recordings here at the end, and I think I'll just probably comment further after that, but just say thanks for listening, and it's been a lot of fun putting this together, and I hope you guys enjoy it. Again, if you want to get in touch with me and ask questions or make comments, my email is r-carter, C-A-R-T-E-R, @cox.net. And this is not quite the end, because we'll play the little radio snippets and then say so long from Texas.
Phil and Brian, WA5GVE, Dave.
Well, hello, Dean, in the net. WA5GVE, no traffic.
Amen. Thank you, Dale.
About 40 over.
See, it's Bill there, K5WTR, Bill.
Yeah, Bill is here, K5WTR. You know, Dale just lit my lights up, my fluorescent lights up. Thank you for flooding in. K5WTR back in there, no traffic.
All right, thank you, Bill. Good signal. Yeah, Dale and Bob both, they're real strong.
K5DHK and the Gulf Coast side band met. Still in Brian at N582M. Go to.
Thought it was going to get 100% out of Brian, but it didn't.
Burkeville, WA5MTX Doc.
Good evening, Dean and the net. This is WA5MTX Doc Burkeville with no traffic.
All right, we're on the what's called a 20-meter band, 14 megahertz band, and we're going to just kind of tune through the band here and let you hear a little bit about what ham radio sounds like. Now, this is the what we call the one of the HF or high-frequency bands, which is good for worldwide communication. Actually, depending on the sunspot cycle, which I told you about, which is not in its peak right now. But anyway, we're down at the low end of what's called the phone band, or the voice communication band, around, let the computer tell us where we are. What frequency are we at now?
14,156.000.
Okay, so we're at 14,156. Megahertz. And there are a couple guys talking here. Let's just listen to them for a couple minutes here.
Next week in the afternoon, I'd say 1300 or 1400 in the afternoon next week. And I will email you. Art. Go ahead.
Yeah, that'd be great, Ken. That'd be great. No problem at all. That'll be fine. I have to go to Tucson one day next week. I'm not sure what it is, but that's just the one day. A shot, just a turnaround. I've got to go in there. There was one doctor, and other than that, we'll be here all week. So I guess next week's Thanksgiving anyway.
So that's a guy. One guy is in North Carolina, and one guy is in Arizona, and they're just having a conversation. Of course, I'm just in Texas, as you know, and so that kind of lets you know sort of what you can hear, how clear the conversations are. For a lot of people, I'm just going to put the microphone down by the radio now and tune across the band and let you hear a little bit of the activity that's going on this. This is a Saturday morning that I'm recording this. So let's just listen for a few minutes here.
Okay. Anyway, enjoy Como. Enjoy Como. And maybe someday we will come there. Anyway, state buone e ben la salute. Vi riporto un altro volo al mattino. IW2NZQ, the cugino Bill, W2ONV. Ciao.
No difference at all.
So exactly the same signal with all three antennas, okay? Yeah, you're actually one LED louder on.
KB8HMR will be clear. I'll let you have some shots at Wyoming. KB8HMR will be clear in 7-3.
Yeah, okay, no problem, Laurel. Thanks for the call. And I'll let you in a lot to come to on any other weekend. This is Mike Zero, off the trail support of all the North America. Mike, the call.
N8RAY.
Victor Juliet.
Hey, Charlie Kilo. Again, please.
Up three of the mic, Romeo, go on. KB8HMR.
Located in Wisconsin, USA.
Yeah, Roger
you down from Wisconsin. I'm sorry I didn't get the call sign. Somebody else was talking in the same time down. What did you tell him when you talked on, Owen?
Okay, the call again. November 9, X-ray Charlie Kilo, N9XTK. You are 5 and 7. I don't think I have my B pointed exactly on you, but I did hear you out there, so I figured I'd throw my call sign out and see if I could make it over across the pond.
Yeah, Roger, no problem at all, Dan. My name is Wayne Charles, Charlie Hotel, Alpha Romeo, Lima, Echo, Sierra, Charles is the name. And you're 5 and 7 with me, no problem, Dan. Could be near anyone indeed when the QRM died down. QTH is northeast England, and local time over here, just 16 minutes past 3 in the evening, Dan. November 9, X-ray, Charlie Kilo, and...
Okay, so what you were hearing there is a station in northern England, talking to a station back in Wisconsin. Now, my antenna is pointed
northeast.
Northeast. So it was actually pointed more toward the England station than the Wisconsin station. I could, of course, turn the beam and pick up these stations differently, or pick up stations in a different part of the country, depending on actually different part of the world where I turn the beam. So just wanted to give you a little flavor for, there's a lot of conversation going on amateur radio. This is just one of the many bands that we have privileges on, the 20 meter band. And we did hear the station from Northern England. We'll see how that comes through on the recording. And anyway, that's just a little brief snippet from the 20 meter band of amateur radio.